in an email.
Our apologies for starting this meeting a little late this morning. We like to start meetings on time in this chamber, but we had a breakfast meeting with the legislative delegation representing the city of Portland, all the districts in the city of Portland, and they start their session next week, and if you get that many elected officials in one room, there's a lot of talk, and it was hard to extract ourselves. So a good meeting, but our apologies for being late. Council, please come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Hales.
Here. We have a number of communication items up front.
Item 78, request of Ron Swearin to address council regarding what is important as safety concerns for the Portland Police Bureau.
I have some prints there that she's going to make.
Thank you. Good morning. And for those of you coming here on communications items, you have 3 minutes. If you please state your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, let us know who that what organization you represent. Thank you and welcome.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Ron Swearin. I live at 1543 Southeast Umatilla, Portland. I'm going to take a little different tack on what I think is important for our police. What I'm giving you is some prints of official U.S. news releases from Immigration and Custom Enforcement. I'm giving you the front page of one category that is on their website. They have 19 categories of criminal activity they investigate. This page I've given you relates to document and benefit fraud. And what I'd like to say is the illegal immigrant population has a very high level of crime that costs the U.S. taxpayers a lot of money to address. Some examples from this very recent news story in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, some phony religious leader was sentenced to prison for visa fraud for producing dozens of illegitimate documents. A Los Angeles area man admitted to operating websites that sold nearly $2 million worth of false identity documents. Missouri man was guilty of a conspiracy to assist more than 100 illegal aliens obtain fraudulent driver licenses for profit. There are huge crime rings in this country producing phony documents, smuggling drugs, smuggling weapons, smuggling people, and our nation, our taxpayers are being forced to pay to put those people in prison, and it's very unfair that to the U.S. taxpayer that we should have illegal aliens contributing to crime and crime rings like that operating within that culture. I'm not saying that they all are doing it, but it's very extensive, and it costs taxpayers a lot of money. So as far as Portland goes, I think the policy of Portland as a sanctuary city for illegal aliens should be discontinued. I think that's insulting to us who are trying to live within the law. And illegal aliens are a danger. The U.S. State Department 2 years ago issued a statement that Chinese illegals were dangerous. That was Secretary of State Clinton issuing that warning. So this is a problem that has increased since the 1986 amnesty for illegal aliens, and it's a problem that obviously, as these U.S. News sources show, costs the U.S. taxpayers billions of dollars to deal with. I had some other issues on traffic concerns, but I guess we'll have to put that for a different time.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next item.
Item 79. Request of Jason Kirsten to address council regarding homeless proposal for people.
Kirsten, are you here? Doesn't look like it, so let's move on.
Item 80, request of Carl Schaff to address council regarding houseless proposal for people.
Schaff? Nope. Okay, next one, please.
81, request of Wade Verner to address council regarding houseless proposal for people.
Mr. Verner? 0 for 3 from that group. Next one, please.
Item 82, request of Roberta Palmer to address council regarding new source of revenue for Portland.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Roberta Palmer. I live in Southeast Portland. Get my glasses on. Those of us who worry about Portland's poor education outcomes are encouraged that our new city government is committed to assuming more responsibility than ever in educating our children. We hope that Portland will set high standards and find the necessary funding, not waiting for Salem or Washington to act, but shaping our own future. In that spirit, let's look at a new source of revenue right under our noses. As our internationally renowned food scene grows, Portland remains the only one of the top 50 travel destinations in the United States that does not tax served food and beverages. More and more tourists enjoy our fine cuisine and leave, paying none of the tax levied by most other cities, American cities and states. Portlanders generally eat out for pleasure or convenience rather than necessity. Our failure to levy a food and beverage tax deprives Portland of badly needed revenue. If we do not invest more in education, we will spend more for prisons, public safety, and all the consequences of poverty. Furthermore, our tradition of piling school bonds and levies onto the property tax may be in jeopardy. Comprehensive state tax reform will likely include property tax relief. Federal tax reform might include limits to the property tax deduction, resulting in public pressure for lower rates. Ideally, the property tax, which increases the cost of housing, should be lowered, not raised. A citywide food and beverage tax has both local and national precedents. Both Ashland and Yahats levy a food and beverage tax. Most localities nationwide add a food and beverage tax to the state sales tax. Notably, New Hampshire levies a 9% food and beverage tax without a general sales tax. Would a food and beverage tax fully fund Portland Public Schools? No, but it should be part of a revenue mix. As you consider this tax, surely the benefits of a first-class education for our children will outweigh other concerns. Portland is famous for many things. Now let's become the city that educates. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's take up the consent calendar. I believe there's only one. I've only heard one request, which is to return item 87 to the Office of Management and Finance for further work, unless there's any objection to the removal of that item. And is there anyone here to testify on the consent calendar? If not, then let's take a council roll call on the consent calendar, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Approved. We have a series of time certain items this morning, starting with item 83.
Accept the E205 initiative report.
Mr. Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Carla, do we have some handouts for my colleagues? Thank you. Mayor and colleagues, today we are pleased to present a report to council on our E205 initiative, which stands for East of I-205. By way of background, over the past 20 years, the city has invested more capital dollars in East Portland than any other part of our city. And that includes over $30 million in acquiring land in East Portland. And through general fund appropriations, systems development charges, a bond measure led by Mayor Hales, and other sources, we have robustly invested in acquiring land in East Portland. The problem we faced is we haven't had the discretionary dollars to develop the land. We haven't had the urban renewal districts the philanthropy, the discretionary dollars to take the land we've acquired and to develop it into the parks which working families in East Portland deserve. Well, here's the good news. Over the past few years, we have completed master plans for a series of new parks at Park Lane, East Holiday, Beach, Clatsop Butte, and Leech. And we've worked closely with our neighbors in East Portland to develop these visions for what new parks would look like. As I said, we've not had the dollars to actually build out these parks. And it will take tens of millions of dollars to keep faith with the promise we've made to East Portland. That was the inspiration for E205, to provide bridge financing for what we call small improvements with big impacts. In 2011, the council seeded E205 with a $500,000 appropriation. And we committed to find other matching dollars, public and private, to stretch that investment. The first improvements were on the ground within 6 months. In just 2 years, our crack parks team, stretching the public dollars and leveraging additional resources, has completed 12 projects in East Portland. To share with you the good news, it's my pleasure to introduce Mike Abate, the director of our gold medal park system, and Brett Horner, who is the manager of our planning and design division. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, Mr. Mayor, and members of council. I'm pleased to have this opportunity to report back on the council's investment on the E205 initiative established in 2011. First of all, you know, why is this project so important? Well, for one thing, we know that one in five families in Portland does not have ready access to a local park or natural area. On top of that, we also know that probably 40% of all of our families in Portland that have children live east of 205. So you put those two things together and you create a huge need for parks and recreation opportunities in the eastern part of the city. Some basic principles is that every one of our children deserves a safe place to play. And that all Portlanders need to have access to physical activity and to nature. And primarily, connections to some of the spaces that we have are also lacking. So trying to provide those connections. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, we have a number of unimproved sites in East Portland, either inherited from the county or acquired, as he described. And this was an opportunity to begin some initial progress. So some key goals. The initiative had several goals in 2011 when we began. First of all, equity for East Portland. We want to make some progress now. You know, a lot of times when you do a master plan, to do an entire park is a big lift. And we heard from residents that, you know, could we get some benches? Could we get a couple of pieces of play equipment? We know we can't get the whole thing, but could we get some progress quickly? So that was really key. What could we do very quickly? We talked about leveraging resources, and then with the City Council's investment of $500,000 of general fund dollars to try to leverage that to have a project that was basically about $1 million. We focused on basic affordable park improvements that could make a big difference, playgrounds, pathways, seating, and drinking fountains, small amenities that make a huge difference and make park visits more enjoyable. We chose sites where the public and neighborhood had already shaped a vision through master planning processes. That meant that we didn't have to start a whole public involvement process again because we already had a vision that that we had captured. And we looked for projects that could be installed within 18 months, which, as you know, from beginning to end, can be a challenge. So we took those goals and really ran with it. And so just sort of by the numbers, what were accomplished. We were able to make improvements in 12 parks, three new playgrounds, pathways and seating in two parks where there currently were none, a new dog off-leash area, a bike skills area, a new community garden, and seating and drinking fountains in six other parks. Now, just a few before and after pictures. We'll move through these fairly quickly. East Holiday Park, again, has a master plan. You can see just a large grass area, a well-loved park, but with virtually no amenities other than a nice parking lot and a dog off-leash area and some paths. But now there's some tremendous play equipment. Similarly, when East Portland Community Center was envisioned years ago and was funded by the previous Parks Bond measure, thank you, Mr. Hales, appreciate that, there was a plan for play equipment at this community center that had not been realized. So that's another one that we were able to move forward on. Gilbert Primary Park is adjacent to Gilbert Primary School, a David Douglas District School. We work with the school to bring new paths, better linking the two properties, and providing safe connections for young and old. And I'd say, you know, here's a good example of where the school district and parks work together to make something happen that made both the school better and the recreation opportunities better. At Lynchwood, we work with neighbors to add paths and an improved dog off-leash area. Park Lane Park, we completely refurbished and expanded the existing playground. We added picnic tables, two drinking fountains, and Tom Lewis is here to speak in a moment to these improvements, and we thank him and the Neighborhood Association for their incredible support. Some more pictures of Park Lane before and after. And then Glenfair Park, we another you know, just a wooded lot, and just having some walking paths was something that could make a big difference for local residents. There's a suite of other projects you'll see in the brochure that you've been handed out. Things at Argay and Cherry and West Powellhurst, Midland Park, and the Columbia Slough Natural Area. All in all, improvements to 12 parks. And then one of our first and kind of most exciting projects is the new pump track at Ventura Park. Pump track is a small bicycle skills area where kids and adults, for that matter, can try their hand at riding off of a paved sidewalk. And it's something that the bike community was very supportive of. And as a matter of fact, this project was built with the help of the Northwest Trails Alliance. And last but not least, a brand new community garden at Ed Benedict Park in outer southeast Portland opened last May. It was created in conjunction with the Friends of the Portland Memory Garden, and this project particularly was one of the ones that helped us meet that 1,000 garden plot goal that Commissioner Fish established.
Mike, if I could just mention, when we were there for the opening and we visited the Memory Garden, which is world famous, and we looked at some of the other facilities, including a skateboard park, I remember asking someone to remind me how it was that the city came into possession of the dirt that has now been developed. And I was reminded that this was part of the land that was acquired by the city many years ago for something called the Mount Hood Freeway. And so another dividend of the demise of the Mount Hood Freeway was a community was able to reclaim this land and turn it into a public amenity.
Great. Also in your brochure is a map that talks about the families east of 205 that have been affected, and you can see in the pink areas, that's the half-mile service area, and you can see that we've made some major progress in filling up some of the gaps of parks and recreation in those areas. So what did this all cost? I mentioned to you that the initial goal was $500,000 of general fund, and then leveraging up to another $500,000 for a $1 million project. But here's where the good news comes in. We actually got all these projects done well ahead of schedule and budget for only $803,000. You can see the general fund of $500,000. We got $30,000 in donations. Recognized Safeway, who made a generous donation for the project. Another $50,000 of grants and system development charges. All of those put together, we were able to bring this project in 11% below our established budget. Four key factors that really made this project successful: the council funding, the community support, and you'll hear more about that, and the fact that we have such a network of strong partnerships, particularly Portland Parks Foundation, who really played a pivotal role in getting the word out about E205. I want to take a minute to recognize our employees who did a phenomenal job. One of the reasons we were able to do this quickly and under budget was we leveraged a lot of our existing resources, existing people, skills, and equipment to make this project happen. Of the 12 projects, only two did we go out of house with a construction contract, and our staff, our gold medal staff, did the rest and made these projects happen. Some of our key partners, I mentioned Safeway and the Parks Foundation, East Portland Action Plan, and residents and various neighborhood associations, Portland Development Commission, which has been very supportive of this, East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation, Northwest Trail Alliance. We had a number of anonymous donors, and the Portland Parks Board. And again, going back for a second to this incredible list of employees that we happen to have in the Bureau. These are the folks that said, when we said, hey, we got to get things done, and as Commissioner Fish, we got to get the first project done within 6 months. They said, okay, we can go do that. We made improvements in Park Lane that I think astounded everyone and how quickly those rolled out. So I just want to just take a special moment and recognize all of the folks that are on this list who contributed to a phenomenal project. That concludes my presentation. At this time, we're going to ask our partners to come up and say a few words.
Mayor, we have one panel that we've invited. If I could invite them up at this time. And these are three heroes in our movement. Linda Robinson from the East Portland Parks Coalition and a member of the Parks Board. Tom Lewis, an indefatigable advocate for East Portland and Park Lane in particular. And Joyce Lay from Wilkes. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And who'd like to go first?
I will.
Tom?
I'm Tom Lewis with Centennial Community Association and also Friends of Park Lane Park. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and council members. I have been associated with Park Lane for about 6 years, and it happened through being a chair of the Community Association, which is the third largest neighborhood in Portland. So we got opportunity, had use of E-205 in two of our parks, the Lynchwood Park and Park Lane Park. The improvements that happen allow us to further our neighborhood involvement for Park Lane Community Fair, which we've put on with Parks Department, movies in the park for the last 4 years, and hope will again this coming summer. And so we desperately needed some drinking fountains and somewhere to sit and play equipment for the children. There was a small play set left over from county days that had been refurbished once, and then it just really was helpful to have another set alongside to make use. Our whole goal with putting on our fair, having accommodations from E-205 projects, is to get 20 more acres built that the city has purchased about 8 or 9 years ago, master plan 5 or 6 years ago. And so by bringing in citizens, users, park users from near and far, this last year we were also able to add two concerts after our neighborhood fair in August, and pretty well filled the park for a month in that way. But just to expand and wrap up a second, what was happening before drinking fountains, when the Nike group had resurfaced our basketball court about 4 years ago. It is heavily used day and night, weekends, all the time. And the groups were running across the street to a neighbor's house to get a drink of water from their hose that they allowed the players to use, and so there was that, the traffic danger as well as just necessity to rehydrate and health for the park users to have in that way, and having the drinking fountains really helped us out. The other thing is we don't have any parking to speak of, just on the street. So in our neighborhood fair, we were able to block off the street and have skateboarders come and display their talents during our neighborhood fair. And that was, again, helpful to have a place to sit, people to gather, the fair goers to use the facility. So we look forward to, as a building block and with that help and input of many park staff, putting on the movies, the equipment in the park, and allowing our planning to be side by side with Doug Brenner, Jeff Melkus, and some of the East Side Parks people was instrumental, and hope that it just up and forward from here. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Linda Robinson, another resident of East Portland. I just wanted to start by saying yesterday morning I spent three grueling hours on the Budget Advisory Committee for Parks. And so this is just a nice relief for me to come and do something positive and celebrate the completion of these projects. You know, it makes some of those other efforts that I do tolerable to see some success stories come out of that process. So I worked a lot with East Holiday Park. This is a park that was acquired by Multnomah County in 1961 and was just a vacant lot with virtually no trees or anything for 47 years before we actually put a path in it and three benches. We got excited about that, but we got even more excited a few years later when we got the play equipment, which was just completed in October, at the end of October. And I drive by there frequently, and there are always, every time I go by, if it's afternoon, evening, weekend, I see kids out there even now playing on the equipment. And it was even used before it was finished. One lady told me when we had our little party that she cares for her grandson just a couple blocks down the street during the week. And so they walked over there one day, and he was so fascinated with the trucks and all the equipment and stuff that they walked to the park nearly daily while the construction was going on. So we were getting physical activity opportunities even before it was finished. The Cherry Park is another one that's in the Hazelwood neighborhood, which is where I live. And it, too, was one of those parks that we acquired. It was just a vacant lot again. And putting the soft path in and a couple places to sit, it's amazing how much difference it makes when, you know, a parent can take a child and the child can run around and the parent has a place to sit. Or if you're walking through it, you have a place to sit and tie your shoe. I mean, it just makes a huge difference. So getting these basic, we still have a couple more parks in our neighborhood that are nothing but vacant lots. It would be lovely if we could continue this effort and get just a path and some benches or a picnic table to sit at. So this is really people are using it. I even use the swing in the new park, so everybody can use the park. So we look forward to the bond measure. We know that these three large parks, all 15 to 20 acres, been sitting fenced, unavailable, and we're hoping the bond measure will include money to do some more than just basic improvements to really get those parks moving forward.
I'm Joyce Lay, and I'm the chair of Wilkes Community Group. My voice is fine, but I've got frogs that are trying to interfere with it today. I have to laugh because of Linda's remark about enjoying a swing. It's kind of the thing I like to say, you're never too old to swing. And there is nothing more joyful in my book than seeing children play in a park. That is a time when those loud shrieks of joy just bring happiness to your soul. And I appreciate, as a resident of East Portland, the attention, the focus, and the results of the efforts of E205. I want to encourage continued attention in like manners for continued development of other parks. In my neighborhood, one of the areas that will be impacted by the E-205 measure is the walking trail to the boat launch in Columbia Slough. And this is a lovely, lovely area. I think that many residents don't even know that it exists. And I have to admit that until just yesterday, I was not aware that it is one of the projects that will be included in this. And retention will be addressed to improving that trail so it is more of accessible to people who might not be able to climb as well. I also want to say, with respect to the continuation, this comes with a thanks not for the E-205 funds, but to the attention that was given by the city through Parks with the purchase of the Wilkes Creek Headwaters property. This is a delight. It has become my personal passion, working towards seeing that this gets a master plan. And I'm proud to announce that our project was selected by community development students at Portland State, who will be working with us in the early phases, along with staff from the Parks Department, Parks and Recreation. I want to say that the concentration of efforts in East Portland really do need to continue. And thank you for what you've done so far.
You.
Thank you, Linda, Tom, and Joyce. Mayor, that wraps up our presentation, and I just will take any questions colleagues have. If not, I just have a brief closing remark.
Anyone else here to testify on this item? Just one question, or it's more a comment. I was obviously familiar in general with this effort. I hadn't realized, make sure I heard you right, that on all but two of these projects, we self-performed with our own Parks maintenance workers, the construction work, rather than contracting it out?
That's correct, Mayor. And I was going to mention that this is an example of the employees of the Bureau going above and beyond, because with the cuts we've taken over the last 4 years, we are asking our maintenance crew and our frontline employees to continue to meet the demands of the system, but we have fewer bodies and fewer resources. And as Mike said, when this idea was floated and we engaged the team, they were very enthusiastic, and it's just another example of the public service that they provide to the broader community and the dedication to the Bureau. And they embraced the concept, and they brought us in under budget and on time. And as some of the folks who testified noted, because Mike and I went to a lot of the openings, the ribbon cuttings, I mean, just putting a children's play area in a space that's not been activated before and seeing the whole community now using it is big, and so our employees deserve tremendous recognition for doing it and for doing it in house.
So, did the $500,000 the council appropriated get matched dollar for dollar by private dollars?
No.
So, what was the match?
It is $80,000, $30,000 in donations, $50,000 in grants. And $220,000 in Parks SDC, System Development Charge Funds. We didn't have to spend a million, so we were at, you know, about $200,000 below that to get those projects done. So.
Commissioner Fish, I just want to say that if this presentation were a movie, it would be described by the critics as the feel-good hit of the season. And I really, really appreciate all the work that everybody did. And I have to say that this makes me proud to live in this city. So thank you all so much.
May I wrap up, Mayor?
Please.
So I want to begin by thanking Mike, our director, and Brett Horner, who Brett has done just a marvelous job helping to shepherd this program through. I want to thank Travis Roybal, Doug Brenner, who was mentioned earlier. And I want to thank the entire Parks team. And we listed all the frontline workers that worked on this. And they deserve our thanks for their service. I want to thank the council and my colleagues for providing the seed money for this. I think there was some skepticism that with $500,000 we could do as much as we did, but it's a testament to leverage and hard work and bringing it in-house that we were able to stretch a rather modest appropriation and get this kind of return. I want to thank Jim Blackwood, who is my senior policy advisor, and Jim was one of the inspirations for this, and he's been a tireless advocate for it out of my office, and I really am grateful to Jim for all of his work on behalf of our park system. And I want to thank the folks who took time to testify. Tom and Linda and Joyce come before us from time to time. They're always very modest about what they do, and they're always quick to give credit to others, which I think, since we have some pastors here, I think that's actually a secret of success in life, is that humility of sharing the praise and the glory with others and giving credit where credit's due is why they are so successful in their communities and why there is progress in East Portland. But I want to be very clear. Someone testified, might have been Tom, that this is a building block. And by building block, we mean these are small improvements with big impacts, which are galvanizing a community, and we're demonstrating that we can actually do things together. But it would be a betrayal of the trust with that community if we didn't follow through soon on our commitment through a bond measure to complete our work. And for 160 years, we have built a system as the envy of the country and that won the gold medal last year. From Lounsdale and Chapman through to the Portland Plan in 1903, given to us by an Olmsted, through to the wonderful people like Charles Jordan who led this system, we have built a great system. But the significant flaw in our system is that we do not provide equal benefits and services to people east of 205. 40% of our families and children live there and is our fastest growing area. We use the word equity. I would use the word justice. Justice requires that we invest in East Portland. And if we get the green light to move forward this year on a bond, and we are ramping up now and doing all the preparatory work, I will ask this community to include substantial funds in a bond to finally invest in building out the parks that East Portland deserves and has waited so long for. And on that note, I thank again my colleagues for their support.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's take a roll call on the adoption of the report.
Get a motion to accept.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Then let's proceed.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for this presentation and for your leadership on this project. Also, the Parks Board, the Parks Foundation, and the good citizens of East Portland for your commitment to equity, not only in words, but in funding it. It's quite remarkable that it only cost $800,000. That's a lot of money, and it was a significant investment by the council to choose in a tough budget year to put $500,000 into this project. But looking at all you got done with that money, astonishing. So good job also to the Parks Bureau employees who were able to get that done, and I'm sure many volunteer hours as well. We talk a lot about maintaining what we have. We also need to provide for those who don't have anything. And this is particularly joyful to get this report because I partnered with Linda and others in East Portland to advocate for getting a park built in Southwest Portland near the only Title I school on the west side as when I was a community advocate. And I go past that park every day, and every day I think I helped get that done. So now there's a lot more folks in East Portland who are going past even a bench or a park and thinking, or a bench or a path, thinking, I helped get that done. We need more funding to be able to make sure that everybody has access to a place where children and grandparents and grown-ups can swing and walk and be together in common space. That's what parks are. It's not your place or my place. It's our place. And so it's an incalculable value to our community to have those spaces where everybody is welcome. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Aye.
Fish?
I'm incredibly proud of the work of my team, and again, very pleased to publicly single out their good work and to thank them. And I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't put a plug in for something else that was mentioned. I think it was Linda mentioned, or Tom, that at the very parks that we're now trying to build out, we host movies and concerts in the summertime. And that's what we call summer free-for-all. And last year, we had a record year, and we served almost 500,000 Portlanders who had a chance to see free movies, free concerts, free rock climbs, free swims throughout their community. And in addition, we serve through our meal program 100,000 healthy meals to hungry children. And that is a program where the City Council has, I think, historically invested about $220,000. And we match that 6-to-1. It's a $1.5 million budget. So we were a little short of our match on this one, but that's in part because we're raising millions of dollars for all of our programs. And that's why we dipped into our SDC budget to provide a little bit more of the match, because we did commit to stretching the original half million. We raise millions and millions of dollars every year to provide services and benefits that our community needs. In this budget cycle, we're going to take some very painful cuts. But I want to acknowledge that public-spirited businesses, generous individuals, and neighborhood leaders keep coming forward and helping us raise, supplement our budget with private dollars, which allow us to make our system accessible to all. And I thank you for that as well. Aye.
Saltzman.
Good work. Aye.
Novick.
I couldn't say what Commissioner Fritz said as eloquently as she did, so I second that, and thank you so much, and I.
Hales.
I'll say amen to the comments about partnership and commitment to East Portland, but I want to focus just for a minute on the management side of this and celebrate that in particular. You know, there's some conventional wisdom about government that we hear, you know, repeated again and again, and sometimes aided and abetted by the follies of the federal government, or maybe spending $150 million to plan a bridge that isn't built yet. But here's an example that sort of turns that caricature on its head. First of all, took a small amount of money, stretched it to a lot of public benefit. Two, didn't spend a lot of time in a long design process, but worked collaboratively with the neighbors of these parks to come up with practical solutions that were doable. And three, the conventional wisdom is always that it's more cost-effective to contract out work in government rather than to perform it with our own skilled workers and designers. And that sometimes is true, but obviously sometimes not at all. And in fact, we got a great deal of value in this case because of the skills of the people in this bureau and their willingness to literally roll up their sleeves and get the work done a lot quicker with a lot less overhead and a lot less delay than is typical in construction. So I just want to particularly call out that success in terms of the managers in the Bureau and the workers that got out there and built these improvements. So bravo, well done. Aye. Next item, Carla.
Item 84. Accept annual report to Council on the Office of Healthy Working Rivers.
Ms. Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. As the creator and commissioner in charge of the Office of Healthy Working Rivers for five more days, I am proud to bring the 2012 Office of Healthy Working Rivers annual report to the City Council. The Willamette and Columbia Rivers are vital to the economy and economic and environmental health of this great city. In 2009, the City Council created the Office of Healthy Working Rivers because we needed to get things done better and faster. The Rivers Office is helping us realize the full benefit of our investment in the mighty rivers, and we're going to hear after this presentation about the combined sewer overflow project. The Rivers Office helps us realize the full benefit of that investment. The Office of Healthy Working Rivers achieves this goal primarily by improving inter-bureau coordination of city-sponsored river actions and maintaining focus on this very important work. We make sure that city rivers efforts are integrated and that resources are leveraged for common goals. This Rivers Office, which I believe is now the smallest bureau in the city, now that the Office of Equity has got up to full staffing. This is the Office of Healthy Working Rivers right in front of us. Our four staff person are a nimble team who add value to make sure that we maximize our expenditure, our investments to the greatest extent possible. And we make the commission form of government work better. So I'd like to turn the presentation over to Ann Beyer, the director of the Office of Healthy Working Rivers.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and thank you, Commission, for being here to listen to our annual report this year. The office has only been around for about 4 years. And in the 4 years that we have been around, the river has been transformed quite significantly. As the commissioner mentioned, much of that is due to the ratepayers' investment in the combined sewer overflow project. project, the big pipe that our colleague Dean Marriott will talk to you about later. What that transformation means is that our river is cleaner than it has been in decades. With that cleaner water comes a changed perception of our rivers and an increased demand for the services that it brings. All of a sudden, this is valuable open space. It's a valuable recreational asset, as well as being a valuable asset for industrial and commercial development. In addition to that, we've made investments in restoration that are changing the way the river looks, particularly in South Waterfront. And those of you who haven't had the opportunity, the restoration project at Slidell, which included a cleanup, and the really innovative project that our Parks Department is doing on South Waterfront are going to transform how that riverbank feels. It's going from fill and riprap to a much more engaging amenity for the whole community, not just for fish and wildlife. At the same time, we're facing increased complexity with our regulatory programs. It's not getting any easier to work on the river's edge. At the same time, demand is increasing. We're fortunate enough to work across the bureaus. We work regularly with the professional and dedicated staff of team members from all your programs, almost all of your programs. And what we do is bring that value added that the commissioner mentioned. We're able to step in when they need additional assistance. We're able to bridge some of the issues. And we're able to do what our parks friends talked about, which is really leverage and build on those partnerships, because we all have an interest in our rivers. I'm going to turn it over to my team, and part of what makes our team so successful is that we come with a diverse suite of backgrounds that allows us to match our skills more effectively to any given project. Heidi Berg, to my right, is our environmental scientist, and she brings a wealth of experience to teasing out some of the tough ecological issues. Kevin Kildoff has years of experience in land use planning and development reviews. And Rick Bastetch is sort of our guru of the Willamette. He brings not only an encyclopedic knowledge of the river, a water resources background, but a passion for the river that he's able to share and infuse with Portlanders, because after all, it's all our river. It really is a matter of equity. So Rick, thank you.
Push the button. No, not that button, the one on the microphone.
I'm awaiting a slideshow to appear. Thank you for your assistance. So what you're going to be seeing is a fairly rapid fire catalog of what we do that's characterized in the report that you have in front of you. And as it's been said, we are the City of Portland's Office of Healthy Working Rivers, a city that exists because it's at the confluence of two great continental rivers, rivers that were Portland's original infrastructure, and rivers that have been home to people for over 10,000 years, as shown here by this sketch of Odal, one of the original inhabitants of our valley. 9,800 years into that period, people changed their relationship with the river. With the coming of Lewis and Clark, we intensified our use and our relationship with the river for commerce and transportation through sail or steam, and we changed the very river that we relied on for our economy. Here's the confluence of the Willamette and the Columbia in 1888. If you keep your eye on that incredible lacework of water and land, wetlands and bays that we simplified and essentially eradicated in the interests of straightening and armoring our river so that we could have commerce. For example, we de-islanded Swan Island, so in part we could give Lindbergh a place to land, and ultimately changed that facility into the hub of marine commerce that it is today. That's not the only way we changed the use of our river. We used it for waste disposal, including the direct input of blood from slaughterhouses into the river in the early 20th century, a river where we had Depression-era people fishing for their dinner in front of a gushing outfall. That was an outrage to the people of Oregon and the citizens of Portland, and Mayor Joe Carson and the youth of Portland demanded clean rivers and were instrumental in passing an initiative that represented one of the first water pollution control laws in the state. Similarly, in the early 20th century, the seawall not only allowed flood waters to enter into downtown Portland, but it was a decrepit septic mess, unhealthy, that needed fixing. So Portlanders set about fixing it with a clean-as-a-whistle seawall that stopped flooding, cleaned up the area. We capped it with a freeway that made us very proud, at least for a while, until, as Portlanders do, we rethought the use of that riverside land and swapped out Harbor Drive for Waterfront Park. Similarly, in the 1980s, we saw a derelict industrial area and decided to move some dirt and create literally a new place, a river place, which is now today one of the most popular areas for Portlanders to visit the river in downtown Portland. More recently in South Waterfront, again, we took an industrial scrap heap. That was most of the area anyway, and thought big in this sort of exaggerated artist illustration where you go, oh, right, it's actually materializing. Portlanders have rethought the relationship to the river. We're doing it today. This was the west bank of the river south of downtown in 1936, a homeless camp. This was it last summer, a renaturalized riverbank, a cleaned-up industrial area, and a now soon-to-be-available 30-acre development opportunity where Portlanders can once again re-express their interest in connecting to the river. Even though we did a lot of work over the years in stopping our use of the river as a waste disposal system, we still struggled with combined sewage overflows. 20 years later and $1.4 billion of ratepayer money later, we have a result. And that result is that we have moved the river, the water quality, from a good condition as measured by a DEQ index toward excellent. We still have problems with habitat and contaminated sediments, but we have moved the quality of the river toward excellent. And there's lots of motion. If you take a look at what's happening today, and this is just a kind of a real fast index of things happening along the river, of course, we have Superfund and NERDA that will change the trajectory of Portland Harbor for decades
NERDA,
to come.
Please.
Pardon me?
NERDA.
Natural Resources Damages Assessment Program that accompanies Superfund to remedy damage to resources from contamination. We have neighbors working to restore Baltimore Woods, a riverside forest patch that will reconnect Portlanders to the river. We have the University of Portland last summer moving down to their river campus, moving dirt, reestablishing more environmentally acceptable riverbanks. We have the extension of the North Portland Greenway Trail that will eventually move from downtown toward the Columbia last year with the Wad Bluff Trail segment completion. We have Swan Island going to the river program for to increase mobility from the mainland, if you will, onto Swan Island. We have a few beaches, sandy beaches, that with a little help can become even better habitat for salmon and other wildlife. Moving downtown, we have Centennial Mills, a redevelopment opportunity that we hope will reconnect people with the river. We have the Central City 2035 Northeast Quadrant opportunity that imagines a way for North Portlanders to touch the river more directly. We have the Burnside Bridgehead and Morrison Bridgehead that will change our bridges from iconic ways to get across the river to way to get in touch with the rivers. We'll hear more about the Willamette River Recreation Strategy in a moment. OMSI is beginning to move toward its campus expansion. The TriMet Bridge is being built, which will reshape our relationship with the river in that area. We have the South Waterfront Greenway, which Parks has met the challenge of moving forward with that this last summer, and we're looking forward to completion this summer. Parks is also working with volunteers to restore the 40 acres that were donated to the city for natural area a few years ago. We're working to reconnect Oaks Bottom to the river to benefit juvenile salmonids. The Willamette Sailing Club is moving toward more condition of being Willamette Sailing Center for all of the public. There's Willamette Park work being done in terms of redevelopment, utility work, environmental improvement of the riverbanks, as well as some new boating facilities, and we have the Selwood Bridge rebuilt, or in the process of being rebuilt. That's a lot happening. There's a lot of actors. We have the privilege of working with all the bureaus practically in the city of Portland. We work with other governments. We work with NGOs and nonprofits. And these are all working within an intricate web of law and regulation. The River's Edge is complex. There's federal law. There's state law. And, of course, there's our own local requirements to make sure that we do what we what's best for the riverfront. In view of that complexity, in 2000, the council directed the development of an integrated work program and passed a resolution in 2001 that instructed the city to integrate its work around five river goals: clean and healthy river for fish, wildlife, and people, prosperous working harbor, embracing the river as Portland's front yard, and creating vibrant waterfront districts, all through partnerships, leadership, and education. That integration, the council told us, was to come through the form of an umbrella of the city's core river-related initiatives. We targeted the integration of these fundamental programs of the city of Portland. So the council took stock in 2008, and Commissioner Saltzman led an assessment in which he made some recommendations, first identifying a problem that while progress had been made, interbureau coordination was still a difficulty, the silo mentality was pervasive, and he recommended a solution of bringing the River Renaissance Program directly under Commission's office to bring the focus and direction needed on projects and issues regarding the river. Mayor Adams asked Commissioner Fritz to take the lead, and she developed the concept and drafted an ordinance which the council adopted in 2009, creating the Office of Healthy Working Rivers and instructing it to improve interbureau coordination on issues regarding the Willamette and Columbia Rivers, ensuring that we meet our obligations and intention in the Superfund process, protecting and restoring the ecological, transportation, and recreational roles of our rivers, and rehabilitating contaminated inactive properties in the harbor. Commissioner Fritz chose to have the office housed at BES for administrative efficiencies. We are a ratepayer-funded entity as provided through annual council budget approvals, but this requires us to focus on the parts of our mission that are tied to the city's legal obligations to improve watershed health, meet our Superfund obligations, and involve citizens in these efforts. From a 30,000-foot level, what we do, we track river needs and projects. We act as the city's agent for advancing and balancing the goals, and we promote integrated systems-based solutions. We do this through program integration and alignment, through community engagement, and by we are specifically charged from time to time with delivering specific projects. And generally, our work falls into four mission areas that we'll go into here in a moment: river project analysis and facilitation to figure out what's happening, how it can best happen, resulting in greater transparency and efficiencies within the city. In Superfund, we're all about citizen information and involvement. We look for ways to protect and restore all the values listed here, and we are very interested in connecting Portlanders with their rivers. So not to keep you in suspense, in sort of the greatest hits of 2012 for this office, we developed it with in collaboration with Parks, the Willamette River Recreation Strategy, and got it before council last February, and where it was enthusiastically endorsed. In West Hayden Island, we delivered specialized technical assistance for assessing ecological values and prioritizing restoration. We conducted a Superfund study of short-term economic impacts, facilitated improvement of emergency communications on the river, and catalyzed a host of riverside actions, most notable among them the Big Float and Unrock the Bowl. So in terms of the first category of our mission areas, the river project and analysis and facilitation, we do that internally and externally. Inside city government, again, we help develop the Willamette River.